UK Prime Minister Theresa May was in trouble when Brexit ministers Davis and Baker quit. The main reason, it was reported that it was in protest over her plans to maintain close ties to the European Union after the split. Then came the 1-2 punch. Her foreign minister Boris Johnson quit. In this edition of the debate, we'll look at how close or how far Brexit is from actually happening, the challenges moving forward, and what the replacement will do, described as a young Eurosceptic, and whether the Tory party is actually in a meltdown mode. Okay, our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, we have Ian Greenhalgh, who is a managing editor at Veterans Today, and also Jonathan Fryer, who is an author and lecturer, joining us from London. Jonathan Fryer, let me first start with you. We're going to get to the resignations. First, let's focus on what happened with David Davis and the crisis that erupted regarding that. The Prime Minister, Theresa May, she was fighting to win the cabinet backing for a Brexit plan. It was a compromise proposal, as it was described, one that united warring ministers. But then she won approval for that, yet it was still rejected by her chief negotiator, which led to that exit. What were the reasons for David Davis's rejection?
Apparently, David Davis was extremely unhappy at Chequers at the weekend when the plan was outlined by Theresa May for the rest of the cabinet. He didn't resign immediately because he said he wanted to consult his closest colleagues and indeed his constituency party, because in Britain MPs are answerable to their constituents as well. And having done that, he then decided that late last night that he would in fact go. And the problem is basically that Theresa May, in trying to achieve a compromise Brexit, what's being called a soft Brexit, so aligning the UK with most, if not all, but most of the EU regulation and laws, while leaving formally the EU, is actually not pleasing either the Brexiteers, who want a complete break with the European Union, or the Remainers, of whom she was one. And this is the real challenge for the Conservative Party, because it's split down the middle. And I think it's very difficult for anyone to try and find a compromise that would be acceptable to everybody.
Okay, great. Let me ask you, Ian Greenhalgh, because you know, this is kind of being brushed under the rug like it's not a big deal, the way that Theresa May spoke in Parliament today. And I think the words that she used was, I'd like to pay tribute to David Davis and obviously then Boris Johnson. But when you take a look at what Davis has said, I'd like to get to one of the quotes that he has said here, that the general direction of policy will leave us in, at best, a weak negotiating position and possibly an inescapable one. Your reaction to that, because after 2 years, this didn't happen just overnight for David Davis to quit.
I think David Davis has quit through frustration, in that he, while being appointed Brexit minister, he really hasn't been a key part of the negotiations. And he has felt that he is unable to guide those negotiations. Therefore, he has resigned, largely because he feels that the process is going on without his influence, and that it is inevitable that it is all going to end up in a complete mess with no deal whatsoever, and that would be the worst outcome. And I think that he wants nothing to do with that situation, and it's a case of the rats are deserting the sinking ship as quickly as possible, and that the wheels are about to come off Theresa May's government altogether because of this issue. And David Davis doesn't want to be caught up in the fallout of that.
Okay, well, Jonathan Fryer, please explain to us again. We need some things clarified here, because from the outside looking in, maybe we don't, you know, the general public might not really understand what not only is at stake, but what's really happening. Because, for example, David Davis has said that, you know, May is giving too much away too easily. And again, let's go to another quote here, saying that she's handing control of large parts of our economy to the EU. Is that a bad thing? I mean, it makes it sound like the EU is taking advantage of the UK in some respects. Please try to explain that to us if you can.
Well, obviously, David Davis's position as a Brexiteer, as someone who would be in favour of a much harder Brexit, means that he's very critical of what some of the rest of us would actually consider to be positive aspects of Britain's current membership of the EU, and if this soft Brexit option goes ahead, would be maintained. In other words, that Britain would continue to be part effectively of the single market in goods and in agriculture and food, though not in services. In other words, British farmers and British industries would be able to sell right across the other 27 member states of the European Union as they can today. But for some Brexiteers, that's giving away too much, because it would preclude a bilateral deal with the United States, which would allow the US to export to Britain such things as chlorine washed chicken and hormone enhanced beef, things which are against EU regulations and indeed which are opposed by a very substantial proportion of the British public.
Okay, let's now go to the most recent developments, if we may, Ian Greenhalgh, and that is the resignation of the Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson. Did that catch you by surprise? He was kind of quiet. We knew that there were some problems. I think it was 4 or 5 days ago that news came out regarding friction between him and Theresa May, which probably was going on for quite some time, but then came the resignation.
It doesn't surprise me in the least. I believe that Boris Johnson, ever since he joined Theresa May's cabinet, has been waiting for the right opportunity to stick the knife in Theresa May's back. That I believe that he was only appointed to the cabinet under the principle that you keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. And that Boris Johnson is the greatest enemy that Theresa May has. And that she placed him as Foreign Secretary so she could keep an eye on him. But unfortunately, ever since he joined the cabinet, he has been waging a pretty blatant campaign against the government. Every opportunity he has had to make a public statement that is in direct contravention of the official government line, he has taken. And Theresa May, to this point, has had to put up with this. She has had to just swallow her pride, and the only reaction she's been able to make is to say, oh, well, that's just Boris, and he doesn't speak for my government. And now his resignation has been very cynically timed, that we have come to the most difficult point in the Brexit negotiations where Theresa May is at her most vulnerable. And that is why Boris Johnson has chosen this moment to resign, because he believes that by his resignation, he is pushing Theresa May to the brink of having herself to resign, which would lead to a leadership battle for a new leader of the Conservative Party and a new Prime Minister. Mm-hmm. And Boris Johnson thoroughly intends to be both the next leader of the Conservative Party and the next Prime Minister of Britain. And okay. He will be in the position of being able to say, I told you so, over Brexit, because at every point throughout the Brexit negotiations, he has been almost diametrically opposed to the government's position.
Mm. Well, do you agree with that, Jonathan Fryer?
Well, I certainly agree with Ian's point about Boris Johnson. Over for months now, if not 2 years, has been undermining the Prime Minister. He is, from many people's point of view, the strongest rival for leadership of the party, though many Conservative MPs are very, very angry with him for the way he's behaved in recent weeks. And therefore, I think he might find it very difficult to actually get chosen as leader of the Conservative Party, even if he has a lot of support amongst the membership of the party, the wider membership in the country. He's been goading the Prime Minister for ages, and at times has been really offensive about her policies, and indeed about the compromise deal which he presented at Chequers. I shan't offend viewers' ears by saying exactly what he described it as, but not very pleasant. And basically, therefore, it got to the situation where he was goading her to sack him. She, I think, quite cleverly, tactically, didn't sack him and waited to the point when he had to resign. And by resigning after David Davis, it rather means that the limelight is not on him. It wasn't him who led the charge out.
Well, let's take a look at the Conservative Party itself as a whole, and especially the associates that Theresa May has when it comes to her tenure since she came. I mean, she came as the Brexit Prime Minister in Greenhall. I mean, we are looking at what could have been the opening for her to for there to be a revolt. But we saw that, well, people within didn't really want that. It seems like they criticized the proposals and they wanted her to perhaps revise policy or to make corrections, but not have her as a whole out. Is that correct in viewing it that way? Because some are saying that within her party, it's in a meltdown mode at this point.
Yes, the Conservative Party fractured very deeply over the Maastricht Treaty, which was 30 years ago almost. And the Conservative Party has remained fractured over the European issue ever since. And I believe that Theresa May, when she became Prime Minister, was handed a poison chalice, in that it doesn't matter who had been given the job, they were always going to end up in this horrible situation. So regardless of what Theresa May did and how she tried to, no matter how she tried to form a consensus within the Conservative Party, she was never going to get it, because the Conservative Party have not been able to agree on the European issue for 30 years now. And they're not going to suddenly start agreeing overnight. And that means that Brexit was always going to be extremely difficult to achieve, because there was never going to be any agreement on the British side as to how to approach it. That the trade issue is very important, that when we originally joined what was then the European Economic Community in 1971, we only joined a trading group, and the Maastricht Treaty that changed all that and surrendered large parts of our sovereignty to Brussels. And it was that issue, the surrendering of large parts of our sovereignty to Brussels, that caused the Conservative Party to fracture. And until we finally get back all of the things that we gave away to Brussels, that split in the Conservative Party is going to remain. And unfortunately for the Conservatives, the major fallout from Brexit is going to be long-lasting animosity within the party, as one side blames the other for the resultant mess.
Okay, let's take a look at some of the audience here. And Jonathan Fryer, I'm wondering how the duo of Donald Tusk and Jean-Claude Juncker, looking at what's happening in the UK, what they may be thinking. I'm guessing that deep down, perhaps they're probably very happy, because obviously in the beginning, they didn't want this to happen. So what could the EU as a whole be looking at here?
Well, indeed, I think particularly Donald Tusk, the president of the European Council, who tweeted just a while back saying basically that he hoped the British government could sort out the situation that it's in, but basically hinting that if Brexit didn't happen, well, that would be great from the EU's point of view, because there is no doubt there isn't a single member state of the other 27 that want Britain to leave. They all believe Britain has been, in general, a very positive member of the European Union. It's a very important economy, and they would like it to stay in. But there is also deep frustration in Brussels by the fact that they still haven't received the document which they were meant to be discussing at a meeting beginning on Monday next week. We heard in Parliament today from the Prime Minister that that document, which was planned to be published on Thursday this week, will not be ready until next week. As you know, we've now got a new lead negotiator in Dominic Raab, who's replaced Mr. Davis. So it's a totally chaotic situation. And the Europeans are understandably frustrated by this. And they say, well, look, there's only 8 months until Britain is due to leave, and we still haven't got a real proper negotiation going. Indeed, Mr. Davis apparently only had 4 hours of meetings in the first 6 months of this year with Michel Barnier, the main EU negotiator. That's grotesque. It really is extraordinary that a government should be so incompetent that it shouldn't get its act together on something of such enormous significance.
Well, the other audience that we need to talk about a little bit here, and maybe you could even throw yourself in there, Ian Greenhalgh, at what you think, and that is the people there in the UK. You know, they're watching this go down. They've seen the resignation. They've seen the foreign minister now resign. And I'm sure there's some that maybe are out to perhaps make their voices heard at some point, maybe contemplating that. We saw what happened, what was it, last week or so, when there were those huge protests. People came out in the UK voicing their opposition towards leaving. I mean, are we going to look at something like that happening again?
I think that the overwhelming emotion now among the British people is that they're absolutely sick of Brexit, that they just want it all to be over, and that regardless of what happens, you know, we will deal with it once it's happened. You know, that they want out of Europe. They want to return sovereignty to Westminster. They want to retain control of our immigration policy, retain control of our borders. And I believe that as long as they get those things, then things like trade and the economy and jobs, they will deal with that when it gets to the point where they have to. But I think that the overriding emotion is, let's just get it over and done with. That they're absolutely sick to death of these seemingly interminable negotiations that appear to have gone absolutely nowhere and appear to not be going to go anywhere, that are going to end in an utter stalemate without ever having achieved anything. So I think really nearly everybody in Britain is now at the point where they said, let's just get it over and done with, and we'll deal with things when we have to, come what may.
Well, Jonathan Fryer, the ultimate question here in some sense is whether it's going to be a hard Brexit or a soft Brexit. With Boris Johnson leaving, the conclusion is that it's going to be a soft Brexit. Do you agree?
Yes, I think that is indeed a stronger possibility now, or stronger likelihood. And Mrs. May has made very clear she's no intention of resigning, and she will stick with her plan. Whether the EU will accept it, though, is another matter, because they may see it as cherry-picking, in other words, being half in the EU and half out, and that would be very difficult for some of the EU partners to accept. I would like to pick up one point, though. I think it's important to make the point that the British public, although most, as Ian has said, are very tired of Brexit, is deeply divided down the middle, just like the Conservative Party. We must remember the vote 2 years ago was 52% for leave, 48% for remain. Recent opinions polls say if it was held again, partly because of younger people coming onto the roll, it would be 52% remain, 48% leave. And that's why the people who marched 2 weeks, two weeks ago were calling for a people's vote. In other words, when a deal is agreed, it should then be put to a referendum of the British people to say, is that what you voted for? Is that what you want? Or should we stay in the EU after all?
Well, we're looking at, 9 months before Britain is set to leave the European Union, and 15 weeks before a deal is meant to be signed. I'm guessing that that is going to be somewhat released so the British public can see that. But Ian Greenhalgh, when it comes down to it, do you think that there's going to be an agreement?
I have thought right from the day one of Brexit that it is going to end without any form of agreement, that it will be a very acrimonious divorce. And I believe that the EU side of things, Jean-Claude Juncker and Donald Tusk, would prefer that outcome. They would want it to be as messy and as nasty as possible, because it then puts off all the other EU nations from attempting the same thing. Because what they're concerned about is a domino effect, that once Britain leaves the EU, then several other countries that have suffered greatly, like Italy, whose economy really has suffered greatly due to European policy, will then also want to exit. Greece is another example that there is a growing movement in Greece to leave the EU. So they want Britain's exit to be as traumatic and messy for Britain as possible in order to deter anybody else trying to leave.
I think they got that already, except they probably don't know exactly how to deal with Donald Trump, but that's another topic. Thank you very much. Ian Greenhalgh there, Managing Editor of Veterans Today. Thank you for your comments. And Jonathan Fire, author and lecturer from London, thank you for your comments. That is for this edition of the debate. Do send us your comments or questions. Newsroom@pestv.ir is our email address. For me, Kavitha, the entire team in the capital of Tehran, goodbye.